Imagine this for a second. You've got a successful business partnership, things are going well, really making strides. But then, well, they reach a point. Maybe they need a serious injection of cash, you know. Or perhaps it's about getting a fresh perspective, some new skills to tackle whatever's next. So what actually happens when a new person steps into that established dynamic? It's definitely not just a quick handshake. It's a fundamental shift, often pretty complex, right in the fabric of the business. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a really fascinating journey into what's called partnership firm reconstitution. And we're specifically zeroing in on the, let's say, intricate process of admitting a new partner. Our mission here is to unpack the essential legal and accounting considerations when someone new joins an existing partnership. We really want to demystify this, give you clear insights and a shortcut to understanding the financial and structural changes. And our understanding today comes from some pretty comprehensive sources that meticulously lay out the steps and, you know, the implications. So let's get into it. Okay, first things first.
When we talk about reconstitution of a partnership, what does that actually mean? At its core, it's really about a change in the nature of the relationship between the existing members. Think of it almost like resetting the partnership's operating system. It's done through a completely fresh agreement, but, and this is key, the business itself just keeps right on going. It doesn't stop.
That's a great way to think about it, and it's important context because admitting a new partner is just one way this reconstitution happens. If you look at the bigger picture, it can also happen if, say, the existing partners just change how they share profits, or if a partner retires. Or, sadly, if a partner passes away, each of those triggers a similar kind of fundamental shift in the agreement. But yeah, today, like you said, we're diving into admitting a new partner specifically.
Right. So why would a firm even want to bring someone new into the fold? Doesn't seem like a decision you'd take lightly. From what we've seen in our sources, it usually boils down to, well, two main practical things. The firm needs more capital. That's often a really big driver. Or they need some extra managerial help. Or sometimes, you know, it's a mix of both.
Exactly. And the legal side here is pretty interesting. Under the Indian Partnership Act, 1932 specifically, a person can only be admitted as a new partner if all the existing partners consent. It's not a majority rule situation. It has to be unanimous. Which makes sense, right? It ensures everyone's genuinely on board with the new setup. And once that new partner is in, they immediately get two critical rights. First, the right to share in the firm's assets. And second, the right to share in its future profits. And of course, for these rights, the new partner contributes an agreed amount of capital. That could be cash, or sometimes it's in kind, like equipment or property.
Okay, capital contribution makes sense. But here's where it gets, well, a bit more nuanced. What if the firm is already really successful? Established, making what our sources call super profits, you know, earning way more than the sort of normal rate of return for that industry. In those cases, doesn't the new partner often have to bring in something extra beyond just their capital, this idea of a premium or goodwill?
Yes, absolutely. Goodwill. It's essentially the monetary value put on the firm's reputation. Think of it as the tangible value of something intangible. Its good name, its loyal customers, its business connections, all those things that let it consistently earn those super profits you mentioned. So this extra amount, the goodwill payment, it basically compensates the old partners. It compensates them for giving up a slice of those future super profits, profits built on their past efforts and reputation. It's like buying into a share of that established success story.
Okay, so what actually drives that goodwill value up? What makes it high? Our sources point to a few clear factors, like location seems obvious. A prime spot with lots of customers, that helps.
Definitely. And the nature of the business matters, too. If you're selling something with stable, reliable demand, that adds value.
Right. And management efficiency. Better management means higher profits, so higher goodwill.
Exactly. The time factor is another one. A business that's been profitable for longer, it's generally better known, more established.
Makes sense. And the market situation. Like if you have a monopoly or not much competition.
Oh, absolutely. Limited competition usually means higher profits, boosting goodwill.
And finally, things like special advantages, maybe import licenses, patents, trademarks, that kind of thing.
Precisely. All those unique assets contribute to the firm's earning power and therefore its goodwill.
So valuing this goodwill, it seems pretty critical then.
It is. Primarily for admitting a new partner, like we're discussing, to ensure fairness. But the need to value it pops up in other situations, too. Like if existing partners just change their profit sharing ratio, or when a partner retires or dies, even if the whole firm is being sold or dissolved or maybe merging with another firm, goodwill valuation is central.
It sounds tricky, though, putting a number on something like reputation. Are there, like, standard ways to do it?
There are structured methods, yes. It's not just guesswork. The first one, maybe the simplest conceptually, is the average profit method. Here, you look at the firm's average profits over, say, the last few years. Then you multiply that average by an agreed number of years purchase.
Okay. Could you give an example?
Sure. Let's say the average profit for the last 3 years was $20,000, and the partners agree goodwill is worth, say, 2 years purchase of that average profit. Then the goodwill would just be 20,000 times two, so R is 40,000. It's based on past performance consistency.
Got it. Simple enough. What else?
Well, then there's the super profit method. This one focuses on the excess profit, so the amount the firm earns above what's considered normal for its industry and size. Goodwill is based on that extra earning power.
Okay, so it values the overperformance.
Exactly. And lastly, there's the capitalization method. This can work in two ways. You either figure out how much capital would be needed to earn the average profit at a normal rate, or how much capital the super profit represents. These methods just provide a systematic way to approach valuing this key intangible asset. Gives a framework.
Okay, so let's assume the new partner is in. They brought their capital, maybe paid for goodwill. Now what? This admission sets off a whole chain of accounting adjustments, right, to get the books reflecting the new reality.
That's right. It's crucial for fairness and accuracy moving forward. Our sources generally point to about 7 main areas needing adjustment.
7 areas. Okay, let's break them down. First up is the new partner's capital itself. We touched on this usually cash, but sometimes other assets too.
Correct. And the accounting is pretty straightforward. The firm's assets go up, cash or maybe equipment, buildings, whatever they bring in. And at the same time, the new partner's capital account, representing their ownership stake, increases by the same amount. It's foundational.
Makes sense. What's number two?
The calculation of the new profit sharing ratio. This is critical.
Why critical? Because the new person takes a slice of the pie, changing everyone else's share.
Precisely. The incoming partner gets their share from the old partners, so everyone's proportion changes. And how this actually happens can vary quite a bit based on what they agree. Maybe the new partner gets their share proportionally from the old partners based on their old ratio. That's often the default if nothing else is specified. Or they might agree the old partners contribute equally, or some other specific ratio. Sometimes one old partner might give up a much larger chunk than another. It's all negotiable.
Okay, that leads directly into the third point, I guess. The calculation of the sacrificing ratio.
Exactly. The sacrificing ratio is simply the ratio in which the old partners have agreed to give up to sacrifice their share of the profits for the new partner.
And why does that ratio matter so much?
Because that's the ratio used to distribute the goodwill premium brought in by the new partner. It ensures the compensation for lost future profit share is divided correctly among those who actually sacrifice.
Right, compensation. Which brings us neatly to number four. The detailed treatment of goodwill. This sounded complex.
They can have a few variations, yeah. But the main principle, as we said, is the new partner brings in their share, and it's shared by the old partners based on that sacrificing ratio.
Okay, but what if? What if the goodwill is paid privately, like outside the business books?
Good point. If it's paid directly, partner to partner, outside the firm's accounts, then no entry is needed in the firm's books at all. It's a private arrangement.
But usually it goes through the firm.
More often, yes. If the goodwill amount is brought into the firm's bank account, then the firm's cash goes up, and that value gets credited to the old partner's capital accounts in their sacrificing ratio.
And can the old partners just take that cash out then?
They could, yes. If they decide to withdraw that goodwill money, the firm's cash would decrease again as it's paid out to them. It reflects their compensation.
What if the new partner can't bring the whole goodwill amount in cash right away?
That happens. Maybe they only bring part of it in cash or none at all. In that case, the amount they don't bring in cash is typically adjusted directly from their capital account, or sometimes from a separate current account if the partnership uses those. The key is, the old partners still get credited for the goodwill, even if the cash hasn't physically arrived from the new partner for that specific purpose.
Okay, what if there's already some goodwill showing on the balance sheet before the new partner joins?
Right, existing goodwill. Usually the standard practice is to write that off before the admission. It gets debited against the old partner's capital accounts and their old profit-sharing ratio. This effectively clears the slate, removing the old goodwill value before the new structure begins.
Now, you mentioned something earlier, hidden goodwill. That sounded intriguing, like an accounting detective story.
Huh. Sort of. It's where the goodwill value isn't explicitly stated, but you can figure it out from the capital contributions and profit shares. Let's use that example again. Anju and Manju, capital's ours, 40,000, and ours, 50,000. They admit Sanju for a one-third share. Sanju brings in ours, 50,000 capital.
Okay.
Now think, if Sanju's ours 50,000 represents one-third 13 of the total capital of a new firm, then the implied total capital should be ours, 50,000 times 3, which is ours, 150,000.
Right. Makes sense mathematically.
But wait, add up the actual capital contributions. Anju's 40,000 plus Manju's 50,000 plus Sanju's 50,000, that only comes to ours 140,000.
Ah. There's a difference. 150,000 implied, but only 140,000 actual.
Exactly. That difference, ours 150,000 minus ours 140,000, arrives 10,000. That is the firm's total hidden goodwill. It's implied by the value placed on the new partner's share relative to their capital contribution. It's a little aha moment.
That is clever. Okay, moving on. Adjustment number 5, revaluation of assets and liabilities. Why do this?
This is all about making sure the balance sheet reflects the true current values of assets and liabilities at the moment the new partner joins. Think about it. Maybe land bought years ago is worth much more now, or perhaps some debts are less likely to be recovered.
You update the values. And who gets the benefit or takes the hit from these changes?
Crucially, any profit or loss from this revaluation goes only to the old partners in their old profit sharing ratio. The new partner wasn't around when these value changes occurred, so they aren't affected by this pre-admission adjustment.
How's it tracked?
Through a temporary account called the revaluation account. Increases in asset values or decreases in liability values are credited to it. Decreases in assets or increases in liabilities are debited. Any final balance profit or loss is then transferred out to the old partner's capital accounts. It ensures they get the benefit of appreciation that happened on their watch.
Got it. Okay. Number 6, adjustment for reserves and accumulated profit or loss. Sounds important.
Very. The basic rule is simple. Any undistributed profits, like from previous years or general reserves sitting on the books, they must be distributed to the partners in their old profit sharing ratio before the reconstitution officially happens.
Why? Because those belong to the old partnership structure.
Exactly. They represent earnings generated under the old agreement by the old partners' efforts, so they get distributed to them. Profits and reserves are credited to their capital accounts. If there happened to be an accumulated loss, that would be debited.
Are there any exceptions? Things that look like reserves but aren't distributed?
Yes, good question. Things like a general reserve, profit and loss account balance, workman's compensation fund, excess over liability, investment fluctuation fund, excess over loss, those get distributed to old partners. However, something like an employee's provident fund, that's different. That's a liability owed to employees. It stays on the balance sheet. It's not profit to be distributed.
That's a key distinction. Okay, the final hurdle, number 7. Adjustment of capital accounts of partners after admission. What's this about?
Sometimes, after all the other adjustments are done, the partners might agree that they want their final capital balances to be in proportion to their new profit sharing ratio. It's about aligning ownership stake with the new profit share going forward.
How does that work in practice?
Well, there are a couple of main ways. Scenario 1, you use the new partner's capital as the base. You figure out the total firm capital based on their contribution and share, then calculate what each old partner's capital should be in the new ratio. If an old partner has too little capital compared to that target, they bring in more cash. If they have too much, they can withdraw the excess.
Okay, so everyone aligns to the new person's baseline. What's the other way?
Scenario 2 is sort of the reverse. The new partner's capital is determined based on the old partner's adjusted capital. You figure out the combined capital of the old partners after all adjustments for goodwill, revaluation, reserves, etc. That combined capital represents their share of the total. You use that to calculate the total firm capital, and then the new partner contributes their proportionate share.
Can we do another example? That sounds like it could get complicated.
Sure. Let's use the Dasan and Vijayan example. They share 3.2. They admit Gafoor for a 15th share. After all adjustments are done, let's say Dasan's capital is Aris, 20,000, and Vijayan's is Aris, 16,000.
Okay, so their combined capital is 36,000.
Right. Now, since Gafoor is getting a 15th share, Dasan and Vijayan together hold the remaining 45th share, 1 minus 15. So their combined capital of Aris, 36,000, represents 45ths of the total capital of the new firm.
Ah, so you work backward. 36,000 is 45ths.
Exactly. To find the total capital, you calculate 36,000 divided by 45, or 36,000 times 54. That gives a total firm capital of ours, 45,000.
And Gafoor's share is 15th of that.
Precisely. Gafoor needs to bring in 15th of R's, 45,000, which is R's 9,000. See how we worked from the old partner's adjusted capital to find the new partner's requirement?
Yes, that makes sense. It's about ensuring proportionality based on an agreed method. So we've really focused hard today on admitting a new partner. But you mentioned earlier, this isn't the only kind of reconstitution. These ideas of adjustment, compensation, they apply elsewhere too.
They absolutely do. Take the simpler case where existing partners just decide to change their profit sharing ratio amongst themselves. No one new joins, no one leaves. Say A and B shared profits 3.2, but now they agree to share 1.1 equally.
Okay, so A's share goes down, B's share goes up.
Exactly. A goes from 35th down to 12, losing 110th. B goes from 25th up to 12, gaining 110th. In this situation, the gaining partner, B, typically has to compensate the sacrificing partner, A.
Oh, with goodwill again.
Often, yes. If the firm's total goodwill was valued at, say, RS 50,000, then B would compensate A for that 110th share change. So B would pay A RS 5,000, which is 50,000 times 110. It just reinforces that core principle. Whenever profit shares change in a way that benefits some partners at the expense of others, there's usually a financial adjustment, often involving goodwill, to keep things fair.
Wow. Okay. That was quite the journey. We went from understanding what reconstitution even means, mm-hmm. to why firms bring in new partners, and then really got into the weeds of the accounting adjustments, yeah. capital ratios, that big topic of goodwill, revaluation, reserves.
Yeah.
Quite a lot to cover.
It is a detailed process, but understanding these dynamics, it isn't just for the accountants listening. It's really vital for anyone involved in a partnership or even just thinking about starting one. It helps you really grasp the true financial impact, the structural shifts that happen with growth and change, helps avoid surprises down the road.
Absolutely. So here's something to think about as we wrap up. Considering all this meticulous detail, all these adjustments needed when a new partner joins, what impact do you think having a really clear upfront agreement on these exact financial mechanisms has? You know, agreeing on how goodwill will be valued, how capital will be adjusted. Does that upfront clarity affect the future harmony and ultimately the success of any business collaboration? Something to mull over until our next deep dive.